we get to sort of explanations, and we get to verse 12, and verse 12 basically says, here's what you need. You need, in the Sanskrit language, abhyasa, and vairagya, practice and non-attachment. You need both, practice and non-attachment. And so we talked about that a little bit, and then I think I've lobbed in some little statement about Zen practice, this aspect of non-attachment. In that particular way they're speaking of, that Patanjali is speaking of in the Yoga Sutras, not being completely clear. And there was a lot of emphasis, in fact, placed on the abhyasa. And so one of the practitioners, Luna, came and we sort of discoursed through that a little bit. And it reminded me that in addition to being very excited just about the fact that something that I felt like I had stumbled upon, really, stumbled is, you know, a good word, because one, I was in the process of picking myself up off the floor when I discovered this. In addition to discovering that for myself and seeing it in the Yoga Sutras, it reminded me that I also came to the conclusion that this pair is also the antidote, if you will, combined. They're the antidote for much of what plagues our movements for social justice and social change. That we have this imbalance overall on the practice side, this effort side. That we, for good reason, right? The world is in a mess, as far as we can tell. And so those of us that have made the decision to apply ourselves to the cleaning up of this mess become very fixated on the practice, the abhyasa, the what needs to be done. And there's no room for the vairagya. You wouldn't even think such a thing. You are applauded the more hours you work, the more poorly you eat, the less you take care of your body. You haven't seen your partner and family in weeks? Good, you're changing the world. Whoever relies on the way in governing men doesn't try to force issues or defeat enemies by force of arms. And we think arms and machine guns come to mind, right? We think tanks and missiles and handguns. This cat knew what he was talking about, and he wasn't limiting himself to just this small view. The arms of our own will is just as dangerous when it isn't balanced by a soft side, by an acquiescing component, by a non-attachment, a vairagya. That we run out into the world wanting to fix things with no sense of the need for a release of the outcomes. so that the outcomes can reveal themselves, so that the fruit of our labor can reveal itself, is a tragedy, really, of our social change sensibilities, our progressive sensibilities. Because just like in a formal practice, if you have nothing but effort, nothing but practice, nothing but pushing, nothing but applying yourself, the grasping ego that compels that to begin with gets all the room. The grasping ego that is driving one towards accomplishment, that's driving one towards, I'm going to be a good meditator, I'm going to be a good yogi, is getting center stage. And there's no room for the antidote of non-attachment to also come up and feed into the system in this, frankly, insidious way of releasing outcome, thereby keeping the force, right, the attachment to force in check, in balance. Right? So the vairagya, the non-attachment, so difficult for us. Of course we're attached. We want people that are homeless to have homes. We want people that are starving to eat. We want people that are being killed to live. Of course we're attached. And still, pure awareness is mistaking itself for that stuff of our minds. So we can't completely trust this stuff of our minds. We can't completely trust where the effort is coming from, where the application of our intention, where the intention itself is rooted, unless we create the opportunity to come to clarity about it by releasing the attachment, by actually invoking the effort towards effortlessness. Only then do we have a glimpse of not only what it is we've produced, the impact of our effort, the impact of our practice, but also the opportunity to, as a result of seeing the impact, also the opportunity to see where our initial intention was driven from to begin with. How many times do we, any one of us, have we head into something so sure we were doing the right thing, so sure that we had the right idea, only to get on the other side of it and realize there were some less than savory intentions mixed up in our otherwise good intentions? Anybody ever had that experience? One of us, two of us, maybe? It's a little bit here and there. And you know how that sureness is. It's not like a, well, I'm mostly sure. It's a like, I am sure. You know what you're doing. Self-righteous to the nth degree, right? This is the right thing. I am right. They are wrong. This is what needs to happen, and we are charging in. And not only are we charging in, we're charging in, and we know what it ought to look like on the other end. And we're shaping and we're molding it and we're trying to get whatever the situation is to fit the picture that we have in our mind. Only to eventually discover that in fact our view was distorted. That our view of the situation was distorted by past experience. That we had a little trigger in the situation. And we leapt forward, not being able to see clearly what was going on because someone's voice reminded us of something from the past. Someone's tone reminded us of something very, very old. And we charged in to take care of that person in that situation because we were not going to let that happen again. And then we could see later, only in hindsight, that in fact it wasn't the situation we imagined it to be. That in fact we had turned on our old movie and got it running, and we were playing that scenario out instead. Sometimes these efforts are fairly benign in terms of their impact. And sometimes they're quite harmful. Non-attachment gives us the builds in the space necessary to see things for what they are. If we don't invest ourselves as much in the practice of non-attachment, of non-reaction, as we do to effort, to application, to practice, making the change happen, we won't be able to see, or we'll see too far down the road to course correct well. For every force, there is a counterforce. For every force, there is a counterforce. For whatever good intention we have, and we apply that good intention, there is a counterforce. There's an impact. It doesn't just get out there cleanly. It doesn't continue on and on. And we're not able to view that impact and the possibility, the potential for that impact without a sense of non-attachment, without a sense of non-reaction. Because, you know, once the movie's going, you see what you're projecting. You don't actually see what's happening. You see what fits your story. Does that make sense? You've got it going. You've decided what needs to happen here. And you can no longer see. I would say we go, you know, when we're triggered by something, we go blind, deaf, and dumb. We are clueless as to the reality unfolding before us because we are completely stuck in our own movie. And everyone is stepping into the pre-designed roles that we constructed back there when we were 4 and 5 and 6 and something else. And everyone just steps into those roles for us, plays their little part, and we get to play ours. And if we imagine somehow that we do this. Does everybody, I mean, does everyone know what I mean? Is this something that we have experienced before? That you don't see what's happening, and that you're just in it, and there you go. And then you get on the other side, and you're like, oh, do we imagine for 1 second that this is not happening on a larger scale? That somehow all of this good intention, frail as it is, does not play itself out with its frailties, does not play itself out on a larger scale when we get together and we decide what needs to happen for the world to change. And then we are caught in this mix of self-righteousness. We gravitate towards the groups and the organizations that further keep our vritti, our patterns of consciousness in play. So we go to the little groups that are like, yeah, down with the whoever. Screw the everybody. Whatever. Right? And we organize ourselves in these like greater and greater little factions of separateness. Organizing ourselves around smaller and smaller as obsessed pieces of identity, smaller and smaller areas of issue areas. And I'm not saying that these are not important. I'm not saying that any of the issues are not important. I'm saying that we get ourselves fixated in our view and being driven in our actions from a place that has no balance, that has no counterforce, no antidote to enable us to see clearly. Violence, even well-intentioned, always rebounds upon oneself. Violence of action, word, and thought. Even well-intentioned, always rebounds upon so the sutras goes on to particularly say that vairagya is the declaration of mastery. It's the declaration of mastery, that non-attachment is the declaration of mastery over this charging forth self. That to invoke this non-reaction is to declare mastery, is to create the opportunity, in fact, for balance in such a way that one is able to be masterful, to be skillful. The master does his job and then stops. The master does his job, abhyasa, and then stops, vairagya. These are two entirely different texts. They're saying the same thing. You apply your effort, your practice, you get on your cushion, you choose your issue, right? Do your action, and then you relax the skin. We say in our yoga practice, you let go of good meditation, bad meditation, frustrated meditation, monkey mind meditation. You let go of this is what's going to happen. All of the bad Republicans are going to blow up and go someplace onto another planet. The master does his job, does her job, and then stops. She understands that the universe is forever out of control. She understands that the universe is forever out of control. That, in fact, this is what life presents us with. And that a kind of obsession with getting it into our image of how it should be doesn't acknowledge reality as it is, doesn't acknowledge the truth of things as they are. That trying to dominate events goes against the current of the way. That trying to dominate events goes against the current of the way. So Lao Tzu does say the master does his job. Say the master goes to sleep. The master forgets it all and says, never mind. The master does his job and then stops. You bring yourself to it. Every fiber of your being is brought to each intention anew. But it is anew, made fresh over and over again by that release, that non-attachment, by that vairagya. It's what makes the moment new and fresh again. Otherwise, you're just spinning on this particular circuit that you've got, that you put yourself on. You can't come back fresh, anew, over and over again if you don't back off, ease up, let go, see the situation for what it is. Don't try to dominate events. It's grace. Grace. It's that sense of grace that lets us say, all right. Christians would say, let go and let God. You let go and you let God. You let reality reveal itself. You put in your little chips and then you let the hand get played. You can't go around and play everybody else's cards for them. That's none of your business. And what, how wonderful. Because that's what life is. They play their hand, you get to play yours. And this beautiful unfolding dance. But this dance is not so beautiful and doesn't feel like it's enjoyable when you're tight and constricted, saying you really should have moved your left foot. You can't enjoy the dance if you're so fixated on dominating the events, on controlling the outcome, on making everything work the way that you think it should work. From that mistaken identity that we started out with. If we didn't have the mistaken identity, then we would have pure awareness, right? If we weren't caught up in this mistaken identity where pure awareness is overwhelmed by the stuff of our mind, if we didn't have that, we could abide, pure awareness could abide in its own true nature and reflect itself through consciousness, right? so it would reflect itself through consciousness, because consciousness is what we actually operate in relationship to, right? But pure awareness would reflect itself, its nature, through consciousness. And we would have an excellent outcome, which is we would believe in ourselves. We would believe in ourselves. And because the master believes in himself, he doesn't try to convince others. Because he is content with himself, he doesn't need others' approval. And because he accepts himself, the whole world accepts him. And this isn't that all we're after anyway? I have no idea. I don't know how the time works anymore since we changed the time. Does anyone know? Let's not do questions.